Thank you for listening to this Bible study from Calvary Chapel Whangarei. We hope you're blessed and encouraged as you listen. Today's message is entitled, Taking Advantage of Opportunities by Rich Robinson.
Last time I was here, we talked about lost opportunities, and I guess this one is about taking the opportunities that we have. And you know, we talked about putting things right before we get to meet Jesus, whether it's in the air or whether we wherever it might be, all right? But we need to do things before they happen, all right? Then we talked about Hebrews chapter 12 and verses 1 and 2, and it says, for the joy set before him, Christ endured the cross. And we talked about what was the joy that was set before him. It wasn't just his faith. He had a vision of something. Like he could see past the cross to the heart of God, and so we talked about, you know, what could he see, and it was the purpose of Christ's coming, and that was for us to be in fellowship with him. And it talks about that in John 17. Okay, and that we too need to have a forward vision. Okay, it's all right to have your faith and your hope, but we need to have a forward vision. What it's all about. You know, if your heart's not in it, then you just, it tends to fail. You know, you've got to have your heart in it. And so that's where we're trying to go this morning. And then we talked about, in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, it talks about these three words, you'd have heard them, you know, and faith, hope, and love, and the greatest of these is love. And we talked about faith, that it has to be exercised. I was just talking to Ryan the other day, and we were talking about flab, you know, and how we need to exercise. One time Ryan had flab, I was saying I did. Okay. but we're just talking about the necessity for exercise. And it's the same too with our faith. You can have faith, but you need to exercise it. It needs to be stretched and pushed and made to work, you know. And same too with our hope. It's got to be well grounded. We need to be secure in God and sure of God. And we talked a bit about that. And then we touched briefly on love. And that's sort of where I want to finally go today, is on this love passage. But we're going to start off in Ecclesiastes, which is, I guess, not quite a love passage. But just while you're looking for Ecclesiastes, I just want to read you a little bit out of a brother that I've just met in this book. He died a few hundred years ago. His name was David Brainard. And he was 28 when he died. But he was a missionary to the Red Indians before they broke into the interior of America, and dealing in those big forest ranges that sort of separated from the Great Divide, I suppose. And he was 28 years old. But anyway, in his process of dying, oops, my book's always full to bits. It took him a while, all right? And during the process of his dying, he was getting these visions of glory. I just want to just read just a couple of quotes. Eternity is another thing that we ordinarily think that it looks like while we're in a healthful state. A little bit hard to understand. So what he's saying is eternity is quite different. While we're in a healthy state, we think of eternity as such and such. But in actual fact, it's quite different. All right, he says here, oh, how vast and boundless. Oh, how fixed and how unalterable. Oh, what an of infinite importance it is that we be prepared for eternity. And we need to be prepared. We need to exercise stuff now that will prepare us for eternity. This is the apprenticeship. This is the training ground. It's not over and done with. This is where we develop our character. This is the apprenticeship. This is where we get to try out, basically. All right. And then he says, oh, methought, or could I now see my... I would like to see my friends, I may have to paraphrase, that I might warn them and see to it that they lay their foundation for eternity sure. And then he says, how amazing it is that the living who know that they must die, and we do, we know that one day we're going to be all good and gone, okay, know that they must die, put away from them that day. We don't want to talk about dying, you know, and yet we're going to a better place. If you were going to Fiji or going to climb Everest or something like that, surely you'd tell somebody. You'd talk about it. Well, we're going to something far better than you can even conceive. And yet we tend to put it away. We tend to just put it off. All right? I'll just say that again. Put off the evil day while we have a season of health and prosperity. And we live at such an awful distance from the familiarity with the grave and the great concerns that are beyond it. It's not the grave, it's the great concerns that are beyond it. And we need to concentrate on that. So having depressed you to start with, I will start off in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verses 12 to 18. Ecclesiastes was written by Solomon. He wrote three books, or collected the Proverbs, and then there's Ecclesiastes, and then after that there's the book of the Song of Solomon. So we're starting with, I'm not into Proverbs at the moment, but we're just in Ecclesiastes. Remember that they're all books of wisdom. We tend to think it's just Proverbs, but it's not. If Solomon was the wisest man, then he had some stuff to say. And so we need to listen to what he has to say. Okay. I, the preacher... chapter 1. Chapter 1, verses 12 to 18. This is sort of his outset. All right. I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. And I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. This burdensome task God has given to the sons of men, by which they must be exercised. So we're in this situation here to be exercised. You know, we're in this world to be exercised. And just like I was talking to Ryan, you know, we need to take that seriously, and not just as a sort of a bit of a game or a side issue. We are training for eternity, and this is where we get the exercise. All right. I have seen all the works that are under the sun, and indeed, all is vanity and grasping at the wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight. That sounds like bending a piece of steel. That can be made straight, but it's not. It's talking about there is consequences. You break something, there are consequences. Marriage, for example. You know, you break a marriage, and there are consequences. I can vouch for that. And they go on and on and on. All right. And what is lacking cannot be numbered. The more you seem to know, the more you realize that there's more to know. And that's the truth, you know, certainly in the light of eternity. I communed with my heart, saying, look, I have attained greatness and have gained more wisdom than all who were before me in Jerusalem. My heart has understood great wisdom and knowledge. I set my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceived that this also was grasping at the wind. So he set himself a task to know, to try everything out. And, you know, he did. And history bears that, you know, the Bible bears that, that, you know, Solomon was a very wise man and he was very wealthy and he used that wealth to do all sorts of marvelous things. But it was a constant issue with him. It was a constant issue with him, and it caused him some problems. All right. Basically, the book of Ecclesiastes is about if you like, the vain and unlasting pursuit to satisfy the human heart from the world's crumbling life and substance. We pursue stuff. I mean, I would travel miles to go surfing, and I still do occasionally, you know, and it's just a waste of gas sometimes, you know. And we pursue stuff hard out that has got no connection at all with the real life issues. And we get bogged down and stuff, and it's just like grasping at the wind. You're never going to catch it, you know. You might grab a handful, but you've only got a handful, and it's gone through your fingers, you know. And so the whole book of Ecclesiastes, which is a book of wisdom, it can be quite depressing reading, because everything you try, and Solomon tried it all, and I mean all, and it's just like grasping the wind. Vanity, vanity, all is vanities. Okay? Whether it's knowledge, treasure, or pleasure, it just makes no difference. All right? Okay. It can be quite depressing, as I've said, and at least leave you thinking. We need to think about the things that we're doing. We need to think about our time. All the way through the book, Solomon shows mankind's rush from one thing to another, okay? We do. We go in fads. Fashion goes in fads, you know. Everything we do goes in fads, you know. We just had the cricket season almost over by tonight, okay? And then it'll be into the rugby season again, you know. And yeah, that's right, you see. And on it goes. It's just from one continual fad to another to distract you away from the real issues of life, you know, and it is just a distraction. Right, people do it. We do it as individuals. We do it as a nation, and we do it as churches. How many churches have got distracted away from the gospel and are pursuing whatever? But it seems that God's just, you know, not in a lot of that stuff. And, you know, we do it no matter what we're in. And churches shouldn't do it, but unfortunately we do, you know. Gold dust and gems and any number of bunch of stuff that goes on, you know. And it just shows that it's just vanity. It's like vanity. I was talking to an old friend of mine many years ago, and he had just come from Pensacola somewhere, and he was a really very good pastor. And as he got older, he just sort of strayed a little, not morally at all, but just he went over to Pensacola and ended up with a little thing of some flaky bits of gold, and he brought it out to me in this little plastic dish with cotton wool and these little flaky bits of gold, you know, sort of in there. And he said, "Look at this, I went to Pensacola and this was all over the seats." And I thought, you know, let's not in our old age look into the trivia of that sort of stuff, you know. It was a lesson to me. If he knew the lesson that he gave to me when he was trying to explain to me some wonderful stuff, which was just rubbish, but it told me something that I need to pursue God, as we need to pursue God. Stay focused. Don't get distracted. Go at it hard. All right. And so I'm a quick reader through Ecclesiastes, so we'll move to chapter 12. because it's all pretty much the same sort of stuff. It's all just like Solomon experimenting with this and wine, woman, and song. The whole works, whether it's knowledge, wisdom. If he had cars, he'd had the whole fleet. But, you know, he had horses and chariots and men and servants and gold and the whole works, buildings, a lot. And so it's just a pursuit of just the vanity. All right. And so chapter 12, and we'll start at maybe just one. Okay. And here he's now, this is the last chapter in Ecclesiastes, and he says, remember now your creator in the days of your youth. So all you young people, I dare say I'm almost the oldest here. possibly am. I don't know. But anyway, okay, remember now your Creator in the days of youth before the difficult days come. And they do. You know, you don't sleep so well when you get old and your joints start to feel a bit not like they should do. And, you know, when you get up, your strength is not quite there. They start to get difficult days, okay? Now when I go out surfing, I can't hammer it like I used to. And because I can't hold my breath long enough when I'm under the water or, you know, all that sort of stuff, all right? And I don't like the big waves that I used to like because I used to get hammered. Okay, before the difficult days come and the years draw near when you say, I have no pleasure in them, while the sun and the light and the moon and the stars are not darkened. You know, you don't see so well, hence the bifocals. I just used to have glasses. I didn't get glasses till I was middle-aged. Then I got glasses, and now I've got bifocals, and now I've got bifocals and reading glasses. And I sometimes still have to use a magnifying glass when I'm going through my concordance, you know. So things are getting darker. All right. And that basically means that your strength is failing. All right. On chapter 3, from here down to about chapter 6, he's just making the same scenario. It's interesting reading. You can put your own stuff in there. It just talk. As he's getting older, you start slowing down, like the old wind-up record player that you people wouldn't know about. And it lost the spring, started to unwind, and it went very slow. Okay, and so that's what happens to life. All right, and then you get down to verse 6 in chapter 12, and he says, remember your Creator before the silver cord is loosed. And now he's talking about death. Okay? Before the golden bowl is broken and the pitcher is shattered at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the well. So he's talking about death. Remember your Creator. That's his point. Don't get caught up in all the vanity that he's talking of prior to that. All right. And then in verse 9, he says maybe I'll carry on to verse 7. The dust will return to the earth as it was. And remember what we're made of. Yeah, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. So those things are inevitable. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, all is vanity. And moreover, because the preacher was wise, he still taught the people knowledge. Yes, he pondered and sought out and set in order many proverbs. And he's talking about the book of Proverbs and other books that he's had a finger in, some of the Psalms and stuff like that. All right. The preacher sought to find acceptable words, and what was written was upright and were words of truth. The words of the wise are like goads. A goad is a thing that you would guide an oxen with. It's a little pointed stick with a hook on it, and you could just slip it in behind its ear, and you could just steer the beast wherever you were wanting to go. Okay? And so wise words can steer you if we listen. Okay, you can fight against it, but we need to take heed. Like goads. Where am I? Goads. And the words of scholars are like well-driven nails given by one shepherd. And we know who that is. And further, my son, be admonished by these. Of making many books there is just no end, and much study is wearisome to the flesh. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. And this is the conclusion that he comes to. Firstly, fear God and keep his commandments. For this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether it is good or evil. Fear God. And by that, we can treat God far too casually. We're Christians. We believe in the blood of Jesus Christ. We believe that he's redeemed us. But just don't take it for granted. God is God. He is an awesome God. totally more than you can imagine and conceive. He is just, remember, he's the Creator God. Remember your Creator who created you. And anyway, so I've probably got you fairly depressed by now. So we'll move on. Where was I? Yes, just a couple of scriptures here that I'd like to look. But still, the whole theme is still the foolish vanity of looking for satisfaction from the world is just like snatching the wind. And so I'll turn to... I have these bits of paper that just I use to mark my Bible. And if I leave them in there, I'll get lost. All right. 1 John chapter 2, verses 15. 1 John. Makes it very awkward. One day I'll get one of those tabs that Mike has got and make life much easier for myself. All right. All right, 1 John chapter 2, verses 15 to 17 says, am I in chapter 2? Yes, I am. 15 to 17. Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And this world is passing away, and the lusts of it will pass away as well. But he who does the will of God abides forever. It's just clarifying Ecclesiastes. You can get yourself wrapped up in it, and it will cost you. And that's what some of the consequences that we talked about earlier. But learn to love God. All right, also in Matthew, maybe I'll just drag up Matthew. There's Romans. Sorry about this. Okay, Matthew chapter 6, 19 to 22. Okay. Do not lay up for yourselves treasure on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. Man, that's such a classic, isn't it? Hey? And you can have money in the bank and it goes backwards these days, you know? So it's just phenomenal. And how many people have lost money to finance companies and just millions go down the gurgler. And, you know, thieves break in and steal your stuff. But lay up for yourselves treasure in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Put treasure in heaven. Make that your goal. Make that your goal. It doesn't depreciate. Okay? It doesn't get taxed. It doesn't get stolen. It doesn't fade away. I've got a brother that is a gold miner and he collects gold for himself. He doesn't work in a public mine. He goes out and gets his own gold. And he has a stack in a bank somewhere. And, you know, he's ever watching the market. And when it falls, he's not so good. And, you know, a year ago it was $1,700 an ounce US. And now it's down to about 1,000, and he's a bit grumpy, you know. And so it's just, there's all this deflation that goes on, you know. And then it doesn't buy as much anyway, you know. So it just seems that it's it can just be too much for you. Sorry. Right. Okay, just a different tact. Does anyone tell me what the first commandment is as far as Luke 10 goes? Come on, I don't want you to go to sleep. I want you to listen to me. That's the one. Come on. Say it so people can hear it. Say it so people can hear it. Yes. And your neighbour is yourself. Okay. All right. So who was supposed to love in that verse? No? No. Who is supposed to do the loving, should I say? Ah, thank you. Okay. Right. We are supposed to do the loving. We tend to take that commandment and stack it on top of God, you know? But it's not. It's we are supposed to do the loving. We are supposed to love God with all our heart, with all our mind, with all our soul, with all our strength. So it's up to us. God's love is not in question. That shows it. God's love is not in question at all. But he does question our love. If you're reading Revelation chapter 3, you have lost your first love. You know, and so it is in question, and we'll get back into that. Okay, how much should we love him? We've already said that. No, Jesus had to ask Peter 3 times, "Do you love me?" And that's in John chapter 22. And they're out fishing. Jesus has already come back to life again from the grave. The stone's already been rolled away. They've already met him twice before. So they know that it's real. And you think that would be enough to wow anybody, because they'd seen him hanging on the cross. They'd seen him flogged. And, you know, now they've met him that is alive. And here he is. He's on the shore and he's cooking up a feed of fish. And they come to shore and they know who it is. And then he asks Peter 3 times, he says, "Peter, do you love me?" And he uses the word agape. All right? Agape means total commitment, like wrapped up in. And Peter answers, the first time he answers, "Lord, you know that I love you." And he uses the word philia, which is like a friend. You know, come and go. Okay, so Jesus asks him again. He says, "Peter, do you agape me? Do you love me?" And Peter answers and says, "You know that I love you." And he's talking about just this filio word. It's like love, but it's not total commitment. And then he asks the third time, but Jesus this time uses the word filio. And he says to Peter, "Peter, do you filio me? Do you love me as a friend?" And Peter answers, says, "You know that I love you." You know? And that was seeming to be, as far as Peter could go, it was just to have this friendship. You know, sort of, it was commitment, but, you know, he was going to take a sword. In fact, he did take a sword and slice off an ear or two, or an ear anyway. And you know, so there was some sort of commitment there. But later on, as you read in Peter's writings, in 1st and 2nd Peter, every time he uses the word love, Peter uses the word agape, total commitment. So something happened between that little feast on the shore and the writing of Peter's letters. Peter had grown, and there's no point in having me or Mike or anyone else stand up here and just dribble away or spout off or whatever. We want to see growth. Jesus wants to see growth. That's the drive of it. We have to move. It's our responsibility, you know, as elders, you know, to care for the flock, not just for caring the flock because it makes us a few number and a groovy place to be. But we're answerable to the King of Kings. And, you know, it is our job to develop, to encourage, to provide, to try and teach, get people to develop, just like Peter developed. Because we are asked to love. All right, loving God, like I said, has not come to the question. And so the very next book of wisdom is the Song of Songs, or the Song of Solomon. It's called in the Bible, it's called the Song of Solomon. Okay. Rightly called the Song of Songs, because it is the theme of themes. I went to a movie the other day called Cinderella. And it's on at the movies. And it was clean. But you know, I got halfway through this movie and I thought, man, this is such a parallel to the end times. Here's this downtrodden person, this little girl, you know. She's lost everything. Her father's gone. She's lost direction. She's housed in this place of becoming a slave almost, slave to the whim of the enemy. Well, that's us, you know. And then along comes this handsome prince and you know, they sort of meet and then they and then he disappears and, oh, you know, and they both feel this something inside, you know, and I just think, man, this is just so like it. And then if you do go and see it, you know, the scene that I like the most, and I'm a bit of a softie anyway, is that during the dance scene when she's in her beautiful big dress and the glass slippers and he's all dolled up, you know, and he puts his arm around her and they just start dancing. And I thought, yes, that's what it's going to be like in the glory when we meet the King. You know, that's what it's going to be like. And that's what God wants. He wants us to so fall in love with him that it will eclipse everything else. Everything else that will come against you, just like we'd sung in here, it will eclipse all the afflictions. Because that's the thing that Jesus could see. His love for his Father and his and us together as one, John 17. You know? And I thought to myself, yes, so that's just an extra. All right. Okay, it's rightly called the Song of Songs because it has the theme of themes. And it's called the Song of Songs because it's to the King of Kings. And it really is to the King of Kings. We, you know, it isn't a book that's read terribly much because it's quite explanatory. But, you know, I saw a couple in here the other day. And, you know, they came into church and they sat down and they were reading the Bible together, and I could just see her head sitting. She just leant her head over and into the nap of his neck, and I thought, yeah, isn't that sweet? That is so good to be in love. And that's what God wants us. He wants us to be in love. I just saw these two holding hands, you know. And, you know, God wants us to fall in love with him. Seriously. To seriously fall in love with him. Because everything else, it'll make our marriages good. It'll make the afflictions step back. You know, when I got saved, I suddenly knew the end from the beginning. I didn't know what was going to go on in between, but I knew where I was going. And that was just, it's just been such a salvation to me. All right. Whereas Ecclesiastes was about the vain pursuit of the human heart to be satisfied with the world, the Song of Solomon is the total opposite. It is the total opposite. Okay? It is the human heart being totally satisfied, being totally secure and just consumed in the love of God. And that's really what this whole song is about, you know. We just, I might just sort of.
Can you sing it?
Can I? Can I sing about the love of God? Oh, I better find some words. But maybe I'll just read you a little bit out of the Song of Solomon's. I think it's just neat. I mean, you have to view it as it is the. You have to view when are you reading the Song of Songs or the Song of Solomon? It is the church's relationship to God, to Christ. It is a love letter to him, crying out to him. Do you know that the Shulamite woman, who was dark and has been tanned and been abused and stuff by everyone else, and she's dark, and if you understand what that means in a society that wants to be white but isn't, it is, I mean, in China, in places like it, they cover themselves completely when they're out in the fields and when they're, and you know, when they're driving the car, so the sun doesn't get on them, and because it makes them look like a farmer. They want to be women of, you know, substance, not just farmers' daughters. And so they cover themselves. So when they go out, they take all the stuff off and they're white. And it makes them look like somebody. And so she's dark. And you know that she cries out, she speaks in the Song of Solomon 19 times. She cries out 19 times. The lover or her husband only speaks 9 times. And there's a bunch of other people there that speak off and on. They speak about 8 times, but it's mainly her cry. It's mainly her cry for her lover. So I'm just going to read you this. I'll try and put a bit of passion into it, perhaps. Okay. All right, now just remember, see, us Westerners are very sober. We're very circumspect. We're very almost unemotional. When you get to the East, I don't know a bit about China, but when you get to the Saudi countries and stuff like that, they're extremely passionate, extremely fiery. All the Iranians that I've met and stuff like that, that's why they make great suicide bombers, because they're just passionate, okay? And unfortunately, that's true, but they're passionate in the way they express themselves. All right, so a lot of the expressions come out passionate. All right, so here is the Shulamite. This is the woman. This is in chapter 5, verse 2. I slept, but my heart was awake. It was the voice of my beloved. He knocks, saying, open for me, my sister, my love, my dove, my perfect one. My head is covered with dew and my locks with the drops of the night. And she answers, I've taken off my robe. How can I put it on again? I've washed my feet. How can I defile them? My beloved put his hand by the latch of the door, and my heart yearned in me and yearned for him. I rose to open for my beloved. My hands were dripping with myrrh, my fingers with liquid myrrh on the handle of the lock. I opened for my beloved, but my beloved had turned away and was gone. My heart leaped up when he spoke. I sought him, but I could not find him. I called for him, but he gave no answer. The watchman who went about the city found me. So she was outside saying, where is he? Where is he? Where is my lover? You know? And anyway, so, you know, where am I? Getting lost. Okay. I sought him, but I could not find him. I called to him, but there was no answer. The watchman who went about the city found me. They struck me. They wounded me. The keepers of the walls took my veil away from me. And I charge you, daughters of Jerusalem, if you find my beloved, that you tell him that I am lovesick. That's just a little bit of it. Okay? But this is a relationship between, you have to take it in the concept of the church longing for God, you as individuals longing for God. If you read it in that light, it doesn't become it fits, and it's the right thing to do. All right, I'm getting lost again in my notes. All right, it is the joy of mutual possession. And that's what Christ wants from us, mutual possession. All right, is the fulfillment of John 17. It's also here in 1 John. chapter 3. 1 John chapter 3, verses 1 and 2. Behold what manner of love the Father has bestowed upon us, that we should be called the children of God. Taken from where we are, that's hard to imagine, but that's the facts. We are the children of God. And we have got no idea what splendorous things are up before us. You know, this world is chicken little in comparison with what's coming up. Behold what manner of love the Father has bestowed upon us, that we should be called the children of God. Therefore, the world does not know us. They think we're a bit odd because we meet here on a Sunday morning, because we talk about something that seems like pie in the sky. It seems like a myth. But it's not. This is the real deal. All right. The world does not know us because it does not know him. Beloved, now we are children of God, and it has not yet been revealed what we shall be. But we know that when he is revealed, that we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. You need to meditate on God's word, on some of those sorts of passages. You know, when we talked about this Jesus that we're going to meet, the glorified Jesus. He's a very different looking Jesus. When Peter met him in Revelations, he fell at his feet. John met him in Revelations. He fell at his feet because here was a very different looking Jesus, covered in a white robe, with eyes that can flash right through you. His feet like boiling brass. His hair as white as snow. You're just too bright to see. And there was a slight on the Mount of Transfiguration. It said that he just glowed. There was a slight moment where his deity just flickered through, and those three disciples saw it and just didn't know what to say. And when we meet Jesus, this is the glorified Jesus we're going to meet. And when you start to read in Revelations what's up there, let your mind go. Okay. All right. My beloved is mine and I am his, and his banner over me is love. The theme is love, but the underlying picture is of Christ in the church. It is a picture that gives it its most wonderful and most intimate meaning. The union between Christ and his redeemed people that can only be expressed in that figure of an ideal marriage. That's why marriage, it says that it's talked that it's a mystery. It's an example of what's coming up. And the more better job we can make of the example, the better we'll fit in for what's coming up. Okay. Whether it's between Christ and his redeemed people collectively or just as individuals that are redeemed and sanctified and a part of the church. So it's not just a unified thing, but it's that as well, but it's also affecting you as individuals in your relationship with God. All right, in either way, it is an expression of the common love for each other. That's what it's about. If Christ is the head, then we're the body, which makes it a loving union. It says Christ is the foundation and that we are the building. Therefore, it's a lasting union. It says Christ is the firstborn and we are the brethren. That makes that we are joint heirs. If Christ is the vine and we're the branches, it's supposed to be a fruitful union. And if Christ is the bridegroom and we're the bride, it makes it a loving union. And there's a list that goes down like that. So we need to learn how to love him. All these things can only be expressed, even if it's only with an imperfect marriage, because we're imperfect people. But that doesn't mean to say that we shouldn't want to strive and develop that relationship. Okay, if an imperfect marriage, and it is only between a man and a woman, and I had to say that. So just because the world wants to go somewhere, we're going to be different. Marriage is between a man and a woman. Full stop. Okay? God's love is not in question, but he does question ours, as I said before, to love him. Okay, so the Song of Songs is our response, or should be. All right. the Song of Song, I mentioned that too. Yeah. So where am I going with this? Okay, for the joy set before him, Christ endured the cross. Faith, hope, and love. The greatest of these is love. Okay, in Hebrews 12, I'll just read that out for you. Hebrews 12, 5, 6, and 7. All right, 5, 6, and you have forgotten the exhortation which speaks to you as sons. My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor be discouraged when you are rebuked for him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens. And scourges every son that he receives. If you endure chastening, God deals with you as sons and daughters. So he does chasten us. He uses those goads to pull out some of the dross, to steer us in this direction, to steer us in that direction. where do I get to? Okay. For what son is he whom the Father does not chasten? So God does chasten us, all right? God, we should love God. We should love his word. We learn to meditate on his word. Don't just read it, but think about what it says. You know, the how-tos of the matter. We need to know how to develop our relationship with each other. We're talking about having this dinner sort of thing. You know, we tend too long to talk about cricket or talk about anything but. And that's got its place. But learn to talk about God with each other. Learn to pray together. So, because, you know, time's not always going to be as cruisy as this. And, you know, having a godly relationship with someone will stand you far better, will stand you so much better, because you learn to trust them. You learn to be part of them. You learn to be relied, you can be relied upon, they can be relied upon. All right. God's asked us to love our enemies. Well, yes, he has. And we've got enemies. Well, you've got some work to do too, and so have I. You know, because God puts things in our way, and so does the devil. You know, God will give us a way around it. Okay, for our chastening, devil will not. All right? He wants you to forsake. He wants you to give up. He wants you to say, "Yeah." You know? Don't yield to him. Learn how to love. Learn how to forgive. Christ forgave you. He forgave me. And I'll just read you a little bit out of a... anyway, we'll get to that if we get a chance. All right. So here are some how-tos. Love is the backbone that makes our faith and our hope have practicality. You know, if it was just sort of faith alone, but if you've got a forward vision of the love of God, of where you're going, it can push you forward. It gives you passion. It gives you passion, gives you heart to do things. All right, just a couple of other quick scriptures here. And I'm having to speed up. Perhaps I'll just turn to Luke. I was going to talk about David. I'll just talk about David. Okay. David, one day, he's up in the Buai somewhere, and there's a garrison of Philistines down in Bethlehem, where he was born. And David says one day, and he's out there in the stinking hot desert, and he says, "Man, it's hot. I would love a drink of water from the well that's at the gate at Bethlehem." Three of his friends hear that. So they go down there. They go down to Bethlehem where there's a garrison of Philistines, three guys, where there's a garrison of Philistines, and they break through draw some water out of the well, fight their way out again, and go and give it to David. And say, just like the cupbearer, he was just making a comment. David was just making a comment, I'd like a drink of that water. It wasn't a command, but the cupbearers, those three cupbearers thought, let's go to it. Off they went. Okay? And then David does this thing. He takes the water and he pours it out before the Lord. And if it was you and me, we'd go, what? I went all that way, risked my life, and, you know, I'm bruised, I'm tired, to give this guy a drink of water, and he pours it on the ground. Well, that's what they were thinking too. But then David showed them, gave them a lesson. He said, this water is far too precious for me. Because these three men risked their lives for me. And I'm just going to quench my thirst on it? No way. So he poured it out as an offering to the one he really loved, showing how much he loves God. And he poured out this drink offering. That's what we're supposed to be like. It seems like an opportunity that was wasted, but it was an opportunity that was taken. We've all got opportunities to express our love to people, even our enemies. They find ways to express that love to one another. It's just so important. And perhaps I'll just wind that one back there. So we come to communion. I had some other examples here, but I'll save that perhaps for next time. All right, we just sang that song, something about if lifting him up. But Jesus said, if I be lifted up, I will draw all men to me. That was the forward vision. Look on the inward and not on the outward. His murderers thought, he's on the cross. Yes! You know? But that cross was really a coronation. A coronation for Christ and a coronation for us. If that hadn't happened, we'd have been doomed to hell. And that's what this is remembrance about. We need to remember that Christ died for us. God so loved us that he sent his Son. And the Son so loved the Father that he obeyed his commandments. And they could have a forward vision. That's what we remember. Remember him as the Lord and Savior. Okay? His murderers thought it was over. It was just the beginning. Okay? And as we pursue God, we're standing at a doorway, folks. You know, we need to pursue God with all our heart. To love him and to do the things that he asks us to do. Find ways, find opportunities of expressing your love to people. Find ways of expressing your love to God. Enjoy his word. Meditate on his word. You know, by crucifying him, they actually glorified him. Okay, the crucifixion became a coronation. He was crowned the King of Love because he went that far. He was crowned the Lord of Lords by his Father in heaven. And for us also, he should be Lord of Lords and King of Kings. So as we come to communion, I just want you to be aware that this is not a trivial matter. It's not something that that it was just done as like a glib thing, or the enemy had sort of won, you know. He has attained for us an eternity with him. Think of the word eternity. And as you read Revelations or the Song of Solomon, realize how much God loves you and how much we should honor God. Don't miss the opportunities. Just do not miss them. And if you want a bit of homework to read, here's a good one for you, Rochelle.
Yeah, yeah.
Just read Luke chapter 7, verses 38 to 50. In fact, you could all read it.
38 to
50. It's about the woman with the alabaster box. All right. So please, could we have you, Jono? I want to play this song. This has been one of my favorites, so maybe I'm being worldly picking a favorite. But all these other songs that we've just had were equally as good, you know. Go hard out for God. When I survey the wondrous cross on which the Prince of Glory died, we'll all come forward and we'll take it back to our seats. We'll drink it and then we'll drink and eat together. And then we might sing this. Okay, thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Bible study from Calvary Chapel Whangarei. We hope you've been blessed and encouraged in your walk with the Lord. For more information on our church, please visit our website at www.calvaryfongare.co.nz. God bless you as you seek to follow Him.